call on the ice stands. We gotta go.
Okay, fellas, we are set to go.
Let's roll, boys. Come on, let's get going.
We are kicking.
Here we go.
Both guys, 5 minutes each for fighting.
Watch the blue.
Play the puck.
We're not doing this.
Hey. After further review, it's the Scouting the Refs podcast.
Yeah, baby.
Here's your hosts, Todd Lewis and Josh Smith.
Okay, gentlemen, play ball. Let's go.
All right, guys, let's drop the puck.
Hey, Josh, just before we really get into the meat of the stuff for this week, I'm wondering, do any of the NHL officials live in Salt Lake City? I'm just curious.
Oh, that is a good question. No, as far as I know, we don't have any officials living in Salt Lake City, but it wouldn't be impossible. The rules for official location requirements, they just have to be near a major international airport. So we do have officials still living in Atlanta. We've had one, obviously Seattle, but we also have Oregon, a guy just outside of Portland right there. So we have folks all over the country, and we do have folks in Arizona. They might not be too happy, but none yet in Salt Lake City.
Those in Arizona might want to be looking at the real estate listings for Utah. This is the Scouting the Refs podcast. Please make sure you're following us on the social channels. You find Josh on X and Instagram at Scouting the Refs. You'll get me on X and Instagram at Todd Lewis Sports. Coming up on this week's episode, solo laps, Kazari's collision, Kane pays the price. Shouldn't that be a penalty? No, it's not a goal, and you'll just have to take our word for it. How's that?
Oh, that last one just does not sound good. Nobody ever likes to take their word for it. I can go on and cite the rule book and people still don't want to believe that. So I don't know, Todd. I got to see where that one goes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Okay, congratulations, first of all, and stick taps to NHL officials that made their league debuts this past week. Stephen Hiff for the Sharks and the Kraken, and Grady Hamilton for the Sharks and the Coyotes. Guys, welcome to the National Hockey League.
Yeah, good for both of these guys, hired in the offseason, making their debuts now, which is exciting. I don't know if you saw it, Stephen Hiff had family and friends in the stands. They're all dressed in officiating gear. So you had a whole row, a whole section full of stripes, which was really cool to see. But good for these guys. You know, you get your first game under your belt. And some fans were asking, why does this happen this time of year? Why are we doing this in April? Typically, linesmen, when they come into the league, when they're splitting time between the AHL and NHL, it's more of a 50-50 split. They work 40 games in each league. We see a lot of linesmen debut in October to start the season. When it comes to the refs, they're working in the AHL full-time schedule, and it's usually a game or two at the end of the season just to get that under your belt. You don't want it to be a distraction, so it's typically with eliminated teams, teams that aren't in the playoffs, which is why, apologies to the San Jose Sharks, but that's why the Sharks got two new guys in games this week, because they're not as, I don't want to say not as critical, not as important, but the officiating is not going to be as heavily scrutinized. It's a little less pressure scenario. And now you've got guys who've worked their first game, expect them to work some more next season. Typical progression, we see 10 to 15 games next year for both of these guys. And then the question comes, will they make the jump to full-time NHL officials? So good for them to make their debuts. We still have two officials, two referees, Riley Brace and Mike Sullivan, that are waiting to work their first NHL game. So keep an eye out in the final week of the season for those two names to join the NHL officiating roster when it comes to debuts. And no, Todd, Mike Sullivan is not the same guy who's behind the bench in Pittsburgh.
That would definitely be a conflict of interest. I can't see you being allowed to officiate your own games or any other games for that matter.
I'm just waiting for him to work a Penguins game so we can have Mike Sullivan yells at Mike Sullivan about the call Mike Sullivan made on Mike Sullivan's team.
I love that idea. It makes me wonder, too, is with these officials getting in their first NHL game, does it burn a year of their entry-level contract the same way it does for players?
You know what? It's funny that they don't have that, which is a great point. But you do have different contracts when you're splitting time between the AHL and NHL as a minor league / NHL official. So it is different, and they're getting paid a different scale in that position than when they're full-time NHLers. So you have those guys that this time of year, too, are looking. You know, we know the full-timers are working for playoff positioning, but you also have the part-timers that are looking to fill that opportunity from retired officials. So when referee Kevin Pollock is retiring at the end of the season, obviously there's an opportunity for an official. And one of these referees presumably will be promoted to full-time. So you get games like tonight, Ducks Flames, we've got refs Cody Beach and Morgan McPhee. Now they're both part-timers. They've split time between the NHL and AHL this season. It's possible. I mean, we look at the two. Beach has worked quite a few more games than McPhee. So is this Beach's audition? Is he in the leader in the clubhouse for that full-time slot? It's definitely going to be a good game for the officiating supervisory staff to keep an eye on and see how it goes, because they are making that decision on promotions this time of year as well.
Everybody's always getting rated on their performance. Okay. The scary situation from last week in the Tampa-Pittsburgh game, it was a veteran referee, who Steve Kozari, who we're happy to hear is on the road to recovery. I think everyone's probably seen the video by now. Totally an accidental collision with Hayden Fleury, but Kozari goes down, hits his head on the ice. The team medical staffs get full props for addressing and being on top of this so quickly. They knew immediately that it was a serious situation and were out and attending to Steve Kozari, getting the stretcher out. We did hear that everything is okay. He's expected to make a recovery. I didn't know, Josh, if you'd heard any further updates. He obviously hasn't been assigned to work this week.
Yeah, unfortunately not. I think they'll definitely take their time with him coming back. Whatever the case is, I know it was reported that he was unconscious briefly out on the ice. So I know the league's going to be taking their time and making sure he's going through all the necessary evaluations. The fact that he'll be expected to make a complete and full recovery is wonderful news. I know they'd love to have him back on the ice for the playoffs. No update on his status yet. I think really his playoff streak's in jeopardy. Kozari's worked a ton of playoff games. One of the guys that the NHL counts on, you know, all the trips, 4 Stanley Cup finals, plenty of playoff games under his belt. I think he's in the 120, 130 range there. So you're looking at a guy who has tons of experience in the postseason, and he'll leave quite a big gap. It's a great opportunity for one of the younger officials, but you know, without any official update, without any status or progress, I'm concerned that that Kozari may not be in the postseason roster, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, we send him our best and hope that he is back on the ice very soon. Evander Kane of the Edmonton Oilers paid a $5,000 fine this week. No, it was not to Corey Perry for yelling at him on the bench during a game. It was because he took the lumber to Calgary's Dryden Hunt early in the second period. He got a minor penalty on the play. Player safety also thought he should be a little lighter in the wallet. And I think Kane kind of got his money's worth here.
He did. These are the dumb plays, Todd. These are the ones we were complaining about before. It's after the play, after the whistle. I mean, the goal's being scored, and sure, you're frustrated, but you can't slash a guy across the hands like that. I'm glad to see that player safety stepped in. You know, you're going to injure a guy for scoring a goal against you. That's what the game is. We try to score goals. Sorry, Kane, if you felt that strongly, maybe you should have defended better and prevented the goal from being scored. But once it happens, these types of retaliatory incidents for legal gameplay, like scoring a goal, are absolutely ridiculous. So I know Evander Kane's not crying. He's not hurting with the $5,000 fine, but I'm glad that player safety did issue that, because this is just a dumb play.
One that we have seen before, but yes, Evander Kane ding for $5,000 there. Can we talk about the Boston Bruins and the Carolina Hurricanes game a few days ago, and in particular, the goalmouth scramble, where it appeared the puck came perilously close to crossing over the goal line? For some like me, it sure looked like it was across the goal line. However, after video review, it was ruled no goal. And as you and I have asked, pleaded, and begged for on numerous occasions, please give us a little bit of an explanation. Well, the league put out a notice and on social media and directed you to the website to say that here is the no goal call explained. Except there was no explanation except that say that the puck didn't cross the line. You got to do better than that.
Hey, that's an explanation, right? I mean, look, the goaltender interference ones, those types of situations, we definitely need a stronger explanation. We need to say the contact occurred in the blue paint, outside the blue paint. It was intentional. It was incidental. It was the goaltender moving into the path. He didn't have an opportunity to reset. There are so many factors at play in goaltender interference. And to a lesser degree, even offside of you know, why was it off? He had control of the puck. And sometimes we get those. He had control of the puck. He had crossed the blue line ahead of the puck, but had control in possession. So it's good. But when you just get the puck was over the line, the puck wasn't over the line, it's frustrating. I don't know, Todd, what else could they have said? Because this is really, it is or it isn't. And I couldn't tell. I mean, it looks from this angle like it's right along the edge there. But the frustrating part is that the NHL can't give us any more information. They can't even give us much of a better angle, because we don't have anything other than this overhead view or the rear view, which it's really hard to tell when you're looking at the puck from a different angle there. We will talk all about parallax view in the past and when a puck looks like it's over the line and it's not. But this should be the easiest of these types of situations. The puck is not moving. It's flat. It's on the ice. This should be one of the times when we can definitively say, hey, you know what? That was a goal. That should count or not. It's frustrating that there's so much debate over whether it did or didn't cross the line, especially when we have, dare I say, puck tracking that exists in the National Hockey League.
Well, this is absolutely another call for puck tracking. And, you know, this circumstance got me thinking, and I know you're worried about where I'm going with this now, but that's okay. So just to spur the bull a little bit. So it gets me thinking too, how exact are the goal lines that are painted onto frozen liquid between two fixed goalposts that are sort of fixed, but they do wobble a little bit when you lean against them? And can you really determine if the puck is across the line visually without any doubt, unless it is way across the line? Everybody talks about you didn't see any white between the puck and the red line, but I don't know, is every building exactly the same? Are the lines exactly the same width? I think there's a little gray area.
Well, this is where you're both right and the lines are the same, but the arenas tend to be a little bit different. I mean, I shouldn't say that there's any difference there. The thickness of the ice is the same. The line is in the same spot. It is a straight line. It's painted on there. I'll give them credit. The staff in all the arenas does a terrific job of making sure that things are properly aligned to league standards, and they do a great job of it. The posts, the holes that they're in, perfectly aligned. They're measuring. They're making sure they're marked and they're in the right spot. But now you've got a line. But the line is not on the surface of the ice. The line is below the surface of the ice, and that ice is getting carved up throughout the game. The goalie skates typically just slicing it up as they're moving back and forth across the crease. So you have some snow, you have some cuts. That starts to blur the line a little bit, and you don't get that crisp edge. And even when we look at the play, you can see that there's not a sharp edge where you can clearly see where the white starts and where the red ends, because you've got snow in between, you've got ice, you lose that contrast. So while the lines themselves are good, it's like looking at them through blurry glasses or through a dirty window pane, that you can no longer see precisely where that line is. And it becomes really difficult, especially when you don't have a direct overhead view of the puck. Now, we've had goalpost cameras, we've had crossbar cameras. I didn't see shots from either one of them, and I haven't seen evidence that the league is still using them, but that was almost 10 years ago that we had cameras in the crossbar exactly for this type of play, because it would be directly over the goal line. So you should be able to avoid having any of the challenges of angles of cameras and different positioning. It seems, Todd, like something that we should be able to get accurately to say it's in or it's out. The line's good, but you're right. The challenges of the arena, the positioning, and even the thickness of the ice and the snow that builds up makes it a little less crisp.
And this is the area where, again, puck tracking is absolutely the answer to solve this problem, I think.
Oh, it absolutely would do it. Look, Ghislaine Hébert is in great position there. He's pointing at the puck. It looks like it's over the line from his standpoint. I think he made the right call. And when you look at it from overhead, is it enough to overturn it? I think it's right on the edge there, but boy, something from a technological standpoint needs to answer that for us. Of all the things that the league wants to do, did the puck go in or not is the number one question for me that they should be able to answer accurately all the time.
Yes, did they get the call right? That's 100%. Okay, let's get to something that's easy to understand there. Controversial hits. In the Islanders and Rangers game, there were a couple, and one I think was a manufactured controversy, if you will, and that's the collision that Mika Zibanejad had in the neutral zone. This is, he's skating to the bench to make a change. It looks like he's kind of glancing at the play to make sure he's not going to get caught and he's not going to put his team in a bad spot. And he winds up on the ice. Peter Laviolette thought it was, I don't know, deliberate or intentional. I didn't think so at all. It seems like a total accident.
Yeah, this was first of all, it was a scary hit. I did not see anything deliberate about it. It looked like it was purely accidental. Two guys run into each other, and if you're moving quickly, you've got a lot of pads, gear, equipment on. So those hits are pretty painful when you're running into somebody's shoulder or elbow or arm pad there, which is what happened in this hit between Zibanejad and Pellick. But I didn't see any intent. I didn't see anything that he was doing to stick his arm out or to try to maximize contact. The two players didn't see each other coming. This is eerily similar to what happened on that Steve Cazari play, where they're both looking the same direction. There's no awareness that they're going to run into a guy. I mean, you can see Pellick puts his hand out. He seems apologetic, like he didn't see him coming. And I believe that. I don't think he had any idea that Zibanejad was there. I don't think Zibanejad had any idea he was skating into Pellick. And I can't see Peter Laviolette's claim that this was, you know, a vicious hit or an intentional hit. It was a dangerous one, a scary one, but one that was purely accidental.
On the other hand, there was another hit in this game that I think was a little
not accidental.
No, it was definitely deliberate from Noah Dobson and delivered to Vincent Trocheck and sent him nose first into the boards. That sure looks like a penalty to me.
I thought it absolutely was. Now, this is in like the dying seconds of the game. I get that it's late. I get the stereotypical comments that the officials swallow their whistles late in a game. But Sudsy, Kelly Sutherland right there looking at it. Man, I don't know how you don't call this one. And Trocheck was fired up. He was blasting Sutherland after the game on why it was no call. Look, I know Trocheck looks like he's reaching for the puck that's up in the air. And he's maybe puts his hands out to brace himself. But I don't see how this isn't boarding. You're hitting a player who's defenseless because he's reaching for the puck or unexpecting the hit there at a dangerous spot relative to the boards with the potential for injury. Look, I'm not saying it's a major or anything, but this is clearly a minor penalty. I was shocked that they didn't call it.
Yeah, this seems like this was a missed call. And again, this happens during the season, but yep. When it's down to the short strokes of the NHL regular season and playoff positions are in the balance, it gets amplified a little bit further. Now, you mentioned that Vincent Trocheck had no problem expressing his thoughts to Kelly Sutherland. Well, Sidney Crosby was another who was expressing his displeasure at a call to the officials this week as well, saying, I'll paraphrase, you may have missed a call.
You may have missed it. Yeah, he was upset. The puck went around, deflected off a Penguins player's glove, and they blew the whistle down for a hand pass. That's where we get into that hand pass. If, you know, did you intentionally deflect it or did it just bounce off your glove? Because that's what the officials are looking for there. The referee can call it, so can the linesman. And apparently Crosby's ire was directed purely at linesman Andrew Smith. So he was assessing the play right there.
Yeah.
And if we have any lip readers, you can say how succinctly. Yeah, he puts it.
I think Sidney Crosby could be an analyst once his playing career is over. I don't think that's happening anytime soon, but he gets to the point of what the play is. But there's another call in the Pens and Leafs game that also was a bit confusing because it was a double minor that was called. It was reviewed and, well, maybe things could have and should have gone a little bit differently.
Yeah, this was a weird play. It's a high stick, and thanks to our friends at Tough Call for capturing this video. But you see, Sidney Crosby gets a stick to the face there, and the referees call a double minor for high sticking. So when they've got that play, they can take a second look at it, and they did. They took the opportunity to review the injury on the play and that there was an injury. So you go to the video booth, you take a look, and you see that, in this case, referees Chris Lee and Garrett Rank saw that the injury to Crosby was not caused by the high stick, but was caused by the puck, which actually made contact with Crosby's chin and mouth. So this puts them in a really tough spot, Todd. You've got a high stick on the play. You've called a double minor for high sticking, but you don't have an injury that resulted from the actual high stick. The injury resulted from the puck. The officials don't have much leeway here in how to handle this. When you have a major or a match penalty, you can reduce it to a minor. When it comes to the high sticking double minor, which is predicated on an injury, your opportunity is only to either wipe out or affirm the call. In this case, they couldn't confirm it because the puck was what caused the injury, not the high stick. So we have no injury on the play as a result of the high stick, leaving them only to wipe out the penalty completely. It should have been a minor penalty for high sticking. It still was. But the review rule does not allow them to reduce it from a double minor to a minor. The double minor comes because there was an injury on the play. The minor is for no injury on the play, but the injury was caused by the puck. So this is a case of seeing it, reviewing it, and sure, this is a rare situation, but they couldn't get the call right. They couldn't make the right call via review.
Okay, so we had another rare situation is what you're telling me about this one. Okay, I'll go with it.
Look, I can't imagine how frustrating it has to be to say, as you know, you've got the headset on, and I know we've had fans say, oh, the officials are making things up as they go, and they're making up calls. They're not. Believe me, if they could make up a rule, or if they could just interpret the rule book as loosely as they wanted to, this is a great opportunity to say the right call here is a minor for high sticking. There was an injury, but the injury wasn't from the stick. But the rule book doesn't let them do that. They did not have that flexibility. So you're kind of handcuffed at that point. You can't say it's a double minor for an injury because the injury wasn't caused by the stick. So, man, it has to be really frustrating. And it's one of those times when The NHL officials are limited in their ability to get the call right because they're calling it by the book, and the rule book is not allowing them to do it. You've always talked, and you're spot on, about giving the officials the right tools to make the call. This time, we need to give them the right rules to make the call, and the NHL failed to do it on this play.
There you go. Okay, after all this serious stuff, how about we end on a bit of levity? And that involves Eric Johnson in the Islanders and Rangers game, who was doing his best to leave the penalty box in as quick and efficient a manner as possible. But he, as the great Danny Galvin said, had things caught up in his paraphernalia.
Look at that. I have never, in all my years watching hockey, seen a player leave the penalty box with the official's headset wrapped around his skate. I mean, and of course, they blew the play dead. The Rangers coach furious because the Rangers are in the attacking zone here. And why did we get a whistle? Well, you can't play on with debris on the ice, even if it happens to be the official's headsets. A crazy, crazy moment there. So a frustrating stoppage of play, but a well-deserved as he's ripping all the gear out. Holy cow.
It's a wonder that he didn't go nose first into the ice, because it was tangled around his skates pretty substantially there. But again, even if you wanted to call down and stop the play, you couldn't, because he had the headset out on the ice.
Good stuff, man. Way to work.
Get in the box. It's the Scouting the Refs podcast. Read more at scoutingtherefs.com. Follow Scouting the Refs on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Email the show at heyref@scoutingtherefs.com.
They're good, my book.
Subscribe, share, and keep those sticks down.
That's good play.